7 billion stories and counting.
SBS Radio.
Joining us on the line is Honourable Daryl Maguire, the member for Wagga Wagga, member of the Liberal Party. Welcome to SBS Radio.
Thank you so much.
You and I share a surname. My surname is Singh.
Well, I'd imagine that half the people in Griffith would share our surname as well, as well as other towns and communities in New South Wales. It's probably the most popular name, apart from Smith, I would have thought.
As I often say, Singhs are outnumbering Smiths at the moment, especially in terms of migrant numbers. But let's take you right back to your roots, because as we understand it, your grandfather was a Sikh hawker who came out of India.
Well, he was. He came out in the late 1800s, as a lot of hawkers did. He actually came to Australia and tried his hand, you know, selling goods, as many of them did, silks, you know, spices and things, and with a rucksack on his back. And he didn't succeed and actually went back to India. I understand his father was quite wealthy and had done very well in India. And I guess he got a loan, or his dad stumped him up, and he came back to Australia for the second time. And then he actually made a success of his life in Australia.
Do you know where he came from in India?
Yes, I do. He was born in a place called Kumat. And the district, I understand, is Jalandhar.
Jalandhar, okay.
Yes, yeah. And so he came here in the late 1800s. He married an English woman. Her name was Toulouse. So it was a mixed marriage, which I'd assume was quite unusual in those days.
Yes, I'm told, because what we've heard so far about hawkers coming out of the Punjab back then, they usually led very lonely lives over here. So your grandfather went on to get married to an English woman?
Yes, he did. They were married and they had 7 children. But you're right about the hawkers and the loneliness. Most of them came out and left their families behind. Mm. And my grandmother would tell me stories about the hawkers that would come to their farm and stay. Mm. They were single and their wives or their children were left in India. Some of them brought them out when they did well, and some upgraded. So they went from having a rucksack on their back to perhaps a horse and sulky, and then graduated to a wagon. And some of them did very well. Others went back to India. Others died and were cremated along the river.
So what more do you know about Sundar Singh, your grandfather? Did he wear a turban? What was his demeanour like?
Well, I'm lucky enough to have photos. My grandmother had a box camera, and she was a prolific photographer. So I was lucky enough to have photographs of Sundar, of Elizabeth, his wife, and the children. He didn't adopt the traditional ways. He basically became an Aussie, dressed in Western-style clothing, didn't wear a turban, and I don't think he embraced, in a lot of ways, the culture that he'd left. He, I understand, was involved in the community. He bought a dairy farm. They operated a dairy farm, and as he went on, he bought shops in the main street of Swan Hill. He had properties there, and a store, a general type store, that my cousin Stan Gurney, who's a little bit older than me, he's 10 or 15 years older than me, he knows a lot more of the history. But I understand during the Depression, great-grandfather would give credit, as a lot of shopkeepers did, to basically keep families alive. And he was very generous in that regard. And he also was, I understand, the first person, one of the first people to own a car in Swan Hill.
Wow.
So he must have done reasonably well from what I can garner from cousins and from my grandmother.
So you said he had a dairy farm, he had a shop, presumably land as well. It seems like he was a very rich man by any standard.
Well, it seems that he did very well. He died before I was born, long before I was born. And even great-grandmother passed away a year before I was born. But I often ask the question, well, what happened to you know, the properties and things, and it's all lost in the mist of time. But I understand he had several properties in Swan Hill itself, because that was their base. But my grandmother would tell me about the hawkers that would come regularly to their farm and stay there, and the tricks they'd play on them. they must have been wicked children. But the hawkers, I understand, spoilt the kids rotten. They just spoilt the kids rotten, and they always look forward to them arriving, but they would play some terrible tricks on them.
What I find truly amazing is the hawkers who came out of India, and I think a majority of them came from the Punjab. They probably didn't have English language skills, yet they seem to have such close links with the community here in Australia.
Well, I would have thought they did have English skills. I would have thought that because of, you know, the English occupation in India. So, you know, English is a very popular language. Perhaps if they came from some of the more remote areas, they wouldn't have, but I would have thought they would have had a reasonable grasp of the English language.
But your grandmother, what sense has she given you about, you know, how he was received by the Australians back then? Because we're talking about a very long time ago.
Well, she never talked about any resentment or any problems regarding race. It just was never, ever mentioned. She would always talk about the cremations that were had along the rivers. She'd talk about the foods, the Johnny cakes that, you know, were cooked. They'd talk about the war. Grandmother would talk about, you know, all sorts of things, but never any of ethnic problems.
So despite the White Australia policy being officially enforced, it seems like the links between especially the Punjabi migrants and the Australians seem to be very, very close indeed.
Yeah. I don't ever recall Grandmother saying to me that they had, you know, problems going to school or that there were issues regarding their race. Not at all. And it appears that the links are very tight and very strong. Even now, of course, Australia and India are the best of friends and forging, you know, that relationship even stronger daily.
But this part of Australia's migrant history seems to be largely missing from the public discourse, because if you talk to the average Australian out there, they think Indian migration into Australia is a very recent phenomenon.
Well, yes, you're right. But, you know, migration to Australia has been occurring since the First Fleet, and suggestions even before that we've had visitors from, you know, Asia, Asia-Pacific, China, in the great fleets of Zheng He. Around 1420. I mean, that's a suggestion that's been made that was a regular occurrence. And I understand that Indian sailors were on board the First Fleet, actually, you know, sailed with the First Fleet because the fleet was leased. And it was leased by the English government. There were a couple of English ships, but most of them were leased and had Indian sailors.
The Lascars.
And the Chinese. The Chinese were here gold mining in the early years. So if you look, I think you'll find that most of those Southeast Asia countries have made a contribution in some way well before the 1900s. And their families are well and truly embedded in the history of Australia.
Perhaps the next step then is to include this in the public discourse and also in the history books, because, like I said, people are largely unaware of this aspect of migration from Asia, especially India and China, as you just mentioned. Is there any way that history books now can start to reflect that part of the multicultural history of Australia?
Well, Len Kenner is an author, and he's been recording the history of Indians in Australia, and he recently launched a book and also a pictorial. They've carried on a lot of work to record this, and that's really the only way that you can do it, is to have, you know, funding for certain topics to be investigated and researched and then recorded. And I guess communities getting out there talking proudly about where they come from and who they are. We encourage you to be Australian, but we also encourage you to remember your heritage and be proud of it, and to pass it on to your children. I hope that's what my grandmother did for me.
Yes.
And of course, you know, when you think about it, I think I'm an eighth Indian now.
Yeah.
As you go on, and my kids have a mum who's half Italian, and, you know, we blend, society blends.
Yes.
That's a good thing.
Well, even if you're an eighth Indian, we will gladly, you know, embrace you as our own to have a Member of Parliament with some Indian heritage.
Yes. Yeah, well, I've actually had some research done on that, and there aren't too many that can claim to have Indian heritage as parliamentarians.
Mm.
There are several that English people that were born in India,
yes,
that served in the parliament, but yeah, not many that had an Indian grandfather. So I think that's one for the board, you know, one to chalk up.
Absolutely. Now, from the vantage point that you have, what do you see as the contribution of India and Indians into the establishment of Australia, into the growth of Australia back in the 1700s, 1800s, 1900s now?
Well, I think it's across the board. Look, Indians, apart from being hawkers and great salespeople, they're involved in so many aspects of life. In the economy, the Indians were very involved in farming, good farmers, and continue to be now. If you look at places like Griffith, Indian people have migrated, have come to places like Griffith and Coffs Harbour,
yes,
and produce fruit, vegetables, you know, viticulture.
Correct.
So I doubt whether there'd be many aspects of the economy and or the social fabric of the country that Indians haven't contributed to.
Mm.
I'm just thinking, even in Wagga Wagga, my home city, that there is a development there that is crashing oil seeds, canola seed, and it's then exporting the canola oil to India and all around the world. And it's been put together by an Indian man, and he is just an absolute go-get-em.
Mm-hmm.
And they've invested something like $160 million into our community, and that's led by you know, partnership with other Indian investors, Indian Australians.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an example of a contribution that's occurred in the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
A magnificent building, a magnificent concept, and it's creating jobs and
sure,
adding to the wealth and well-being of Australia.
But I guess, coming back to what I said about the local Australian population not knowing the Indian heritage, even the Indian migrants into Australia don't understand the sense of history that Indian migrants have in this country. So what would your message be today to all those listening to you?
Well, my message is tell your kids about the great things that Indians have done in this community and continue to do, to pass on that history, whether it be through the works of the like of Len Kenner and others, or whether it be a verbal history. It's important that you talk about it proudly. And the other thing is that the Australian chop down a tall poppy syndrome is a problem.
Yeah.
And you need to encourage and to recognise achievements like the Robe Oil Facility and pat people like D.D. Saxena on the back and say thank you for what you're doing and be proud of their achievements, be part of it.
Well, we're very proud of what you've been able to achieve as well. Like I said, we'll gladly claim you as having Punjabi and Indian heritage and being a Member of Parliament. I think that will serve as a source of inspiration to the others listening to you as well.
Well, I hope so, because I think it just goes to show that in this country you can succeed in whatever field you choose. And Sundar Singh coming to Australia in the late 1800s, failing and then returning home and coming back again and having a second go and succeeding, and then his children's children all have made a life for themselves in this country. I think this country has given people so many opportunities. And then whoever would have believed that his great-grandson could be a Member of Parliament? But that's the kind of thing that happens in this country. I think it's a good thing. It's a good thing where we can have people who migrate, who integrate into our community, who contribute, and then ultimately serve their communities in councils, on state government, federal government. It is a good thing that we can do it in such a way that we have those opportunities that a lot of countries don't have. I think it's something we should be very proud of as a country and thankful for.
Thank you very much for speaking to us. And as I part, I must say, Sat Sri Akal.
Thank you so much.
7 billion stories and counting. SBS Radio.